If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this instructional episode of Mind Pump. So Adam and I are in the studio recording without Justin because Justin is doing some filming out in the filming studio right now. And we were sitting down, hanging out, talking, and we're like, what should we record? You know, what should we talk about? And lately we've been trying to bring it back to the basics. So if you've been listening to our show for, you know, at least the last few months, you could see that we've been doing these episodes where we talk about like how to train your legs or, you know, how to do HIIT training properly or whatever. So Adam and I were sitting here and we're like, let's talk about arm training. Like that's a really, really popular topic. We talked about that way back in the day when we first started Mind Pump. So we thought we'd revisit it.
Well, you just recently wrote a really incredible guide that goes along with it, and we're getting a great response. So it just seems like, okay, well, if we're getting a great response on the Facebook advertising, so many people are opting in and loving it, we may as well introduce it to our audience on the podcast too.
Now, it's a totally free guide. You can find it at mindpumpfree.com. It's called How to Get Big Arms. I also do want to remind everybody, it is September, and we have launched a brand new MAPS program, MAPS Strong, Strongman-inspired MAPS program. It's great for building muscle, building strength, and boosting your metabolism. So if you want a faster metabolism, this is one of the best programs you could do. All you need is regular gym equipment, by the way. We get a lot of questions of people saying, do I need strongman equipment? No, you don't.
That being said, there are those exercises in there. We just offer alternatives for somebody who's in
That's
a gym.
That's right. If you do have strongman equipment, we do have some options where you can get real, where things can get real fun. Now, MAPS Strong, you can find at mapsstrong.com. All of our other programs you can find at mapsfitnessproducts.com. And that's it. So here's the episode where Adam and I are talking about how to develop amazing arms.
Here I go again on my own, going down the only road I'd ever known.
Whoa.
See?
Well, I miss Justin.
We don't need Justin. We don't fucking need Justin anymore. Lessons are paying off.
He's out in the studio right now filming some stuff. I don't want to say what it is.
Well, yeah, we can tell people. I think it's good to tell people. What do you think, Doug? We can tell people what we're doing.
It's kind of a secret.
Well, it's not really. It's a giving back, right? I think, and I think we've made this promise to our audience. At least we communicate this in the forum often, is that we'll always be improving what we've already created. So if you're somebody who already owns, like MAPS Anabolic, you know, I hope there'll be version 2, version 3. And right now we're working on version 2 of all the programs where we've taken all the information and put it in an
easier to use package.
Yeah, well, we're addressing all the issues that people say.
Hyperlinks, better videos,
hyperlinks, better quality of everything. So
here's something Doug and I were talking about. We were looking at the MAPS Anabolic videos, and I had totally forgot that we had redone a lot of them. Remember, we did them all over, and they were instructional.
Yeah.
So I was thinking we'll have the video that shows the person demoing it, but then have another underneath for more detail. So we'll keep both in there if people want.
You know, absolutely. So that was one of the, so you saw the form. I think it was a shout out to Jessica Rose, I believe, who owns like all of our programs. And so she made a comment.
OG.
Yeah, she made a comment on there. Like, I think I'm, you know, it's fair that I can comment on your guys' programs. I've been doing this for a long time. And she made the comment of one of the recent ones, Strong, because it is just the quick videos and there, you know, some detailed movements in there. And, you know, I explained to her that, you know, what we're working on, and that's part of how the YouTube has always been a complement to the...
An extension, if
anything. Yeah, so if, you know, because there are some people that they just want to see the exercise, because that was the complaint before where we went really long, detailed on exercises, was some people were like, just show me, I know to bicep curls, I don't need these elaborate 12-minute videos on how to do it, but... Then again, there are some movements that are very detailed, and there are a handful of people that will say, hey, I wish there was more information regarding this. So there'll be a hyperlink in the future of those exercises, so you have that option of, I just want to know the exercise, see what it is real quick, or this is really complicated, I want to see a more in-depth exercise.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the challenge of being a personal trainer with a lot of experience and then creating on top, trying to create a program for a large audience, because a lot of the programs that you see online are not created by trainers with lots of experience. They're created by people that maybe know some exercises and know how to package it well and make it and sell it well. But the programming, you can always tell. I'll look at the program and be like, okay, obviously a really good trainer didn't put this together. This is either an athlete that's super elite and genetically gifted, or what's more common is someone who doesn't even know anything about exercise and just puts up exercises that look cool.
Right.
But rarely do you see one that, do I look at a program and say, okay, I can tell a trainer with lots of experience put this together because, you know, when I'm coaching, I know what to coach on based on the years I've worked with people. I know what things to focus on. I know how to put a program together based on all the experience of working with people who are, you know, when you've worked with thousands of people over 20 years, you get a pretty good understanding of the general type of person that you're going to end up working with and what you need to focus on. If I just, all I ever did was work with pro bodybuilders, my coaching and training would be very, very different. If I only ever worked with athletes, it'd be very, very different. But we've worked with such a wide variety of people. We kind of know, okay, this is what we should focus on. This is what it should look like. And so it's made it challenging, but it's, again, along the way, we're going to revamp and upgrade everything as we continue to go along. So you can expect, and here's the best, the best part is, and this is something we talked about early on, because I remember this discussion, like, okay, what do we do when we redo a program, make it look better, put it in a better format or whatever? Do we, what about the people who've already had access to it? And it's like, all of us agreed. They always will have access forever. Right. Even if it's upgraded, 100 times,
right,
people are going to have access forever. So
yeah, it's all coming. So Justin's working on that today. Justin's been, we look to him to handle all the model stuff and the shooting and everything like that. It's nice that we actually can be relieved of that a little bit, but he's outside the studio right now, mm-hmm, shooting that. And so we thought today we'd do we've been getting such great response, which, it's like, how many times have we learned this lesson? We sometimes get off in the weeds and into topics that we love to talk about. Mm-hmm, and every time we do these simple episodes that are about a specific topic, or maybe about something that a blog that you wrote that we got a great response for, we get a great response on the podcast. And, you just recently wrote an incredible blog that's getting, or a white paper that's getting, a lead magnet, whatever you want to call it, that's getting a ton of traction right now. And that's the Big Arms Guide.
Yeah, it's the most common, especially for guys. Although, gosh, I tell you what, dude, I remember early on when I was a trainer, women used to tell me that they didn't want to work arms. And now more and more you're getting women who are like, I want really sculpted arms. I want to build my arms. I want to build muscle there. Because I think they finally realize that, building your arms doesn't mean you're going to look like, bodybuilders. You're just going to have this really nice toned looking arms or whatever the terminology that's popular at the time.
So you got into squatting when you were young, like, and you talk about this, but I was notorious for, like, all I did was arms.
Oh,
yeah. I was that kid.
That's common.
I think I was more common. It was rare to meet another 17-year-old boy that was in the squat rack. So you were an anomaly, I think, where I was like the rest of the guys, where we were doing bicep, tricep, and then chest. It was chest on Monday, then buys and tries spread out over the week as much as possible.
There's a lot of myths around training the arms, like what works well for the arms, what's going to get them to develop, what's going to get them to respond. It is a popular body part, like you said, like you're saying, to train, especially for guys. They go to the gym and it's like, what is it, chest and arm day, right? Like every other day is chest and arm day and they neglect everything else. But there's a lot of myths around them, and a lot of the myths surround, it's funny, I think a lot of it has to do with when they've invented machines, or people coming out and saying, this new technique with an exercise is going to develop your arms, or it's all about the pump, or it's all about, whatever. There's arm training is both extremely simple but also complex. It's both. It's simple in the sense that there's very basic, simple exercises that are extremely effective. It can be complex in the sense that how you apply those exercises, the frequency, the intensity, the volume, that's the part that can be a little bit complex. And that's where I think people get confused a little bit.
Well, one of the myths too that you see is that because there's a genetic component too, right? Like where your origin and insertion is.
Oh, the length of the muscle?
Right. Yeah. Really, really depends on, like, you get a lot of guys that do this. And I remember we called out our boy, Dr. Integrity, when we first started working the parts of the bicep, because some people have these incredible peaks on their biceps. Some people have these massive long looking biceps. And so because you have these genetic differences, you get people that try and market to them to try and capture leads and get people. And it's like, it's just not true. There's, you know, there's not an exercise you're going to do that is, you know, the peak. You're going to make you a more peaky bicep. You're
change the shape of your, aside from building it.
Right, right. That's really what it comes down to. Either we build the muscle or we don't build the muscle. But there are some general truths. And, you know, I remember one of the big paradigm shattering moments for me was understanding the importance of like my elbow positioning. And I think I did a YouTube video on this.
That's really the main, I mean, that, and then of course your hand, you know, pronating or supinating. Those are really the two things that'll affect, you know, it's, you know where it started, by the way? So it started back when bodybuilding was in its infancy, right? You had the first Mr. Olympia was Larry Scott. So if you don't know who he is, you can look him up. He had really, really impressive looking biceps. And in fact, you know, bodybuilding, by the way, is what made biceps really popular. Before bodybuilding, it wasn't like this. When someone said, let me see your muscle, it wasn't like the instinctual for people to flex their bicep.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that happened. You flex your muscle. I mean, you have how many muscles you have in your body, right? And people know it's your bicep. But Larry Scott was the first Mr. Olympia. He's kind of this really good looking dude, really long muscle belly. So which if you're a bodybuilder, it's, you know, long muscle bellies are ideal because as the muscle develops, they just look bigger and fuller. And Larry Scott used to do a lot of preacher curls. It's on the preacher bench. Now, he called them Scott curls. Very smart of him to do this. And Weider at the time, who, you know, obviously Weider, the first and maybe not the first, but the most popular bodybuilding or muscle building publications like Muscle and Fitness and Flex and all that stuff, you know, they put them in their magazines. And they talked about how the Scott curl or the preacher curl built the bicep peak. So if you want a big peak like Mr. Olympia, then do the Scott curl. And you can see that, like, the brilliance in Weider's marketing. But you can also see the misinformation, obviously, because they were marketing it that way to try and make it, you know, seem special, especially to his athlete. People started to believe some of the stuff. But yeah, when you look at the bicep, you know, the word bicep, sep means head. Bi means two. So there's two heads to the bicep. There's like two parts to the bicep. But the origin and insertion of those two heads are so close together that, you know, working one head
over
the other.
You're not isolating one.
No.
Never.
No, you're not. They're both working. And trying to isolate the bottom part of the bicep versus the middle part of the bicep versus the back part of the bicep or the top of the bicep for the peak or whatever, it doesn't work that way. Because the muscle fibers, although they are small and they connect to each other, when a muscle contracts, it pulls both ends together. And there's two ends to it. So I can't pull from one end to the middle without pulling from the other end. It doesn't work that way. So you can't, you know, work on the peak or the length of the bicep. That was another big one. Like, do these exercises, make your biceps longer or whatever. You can't do those things. But what you can do, and this is where, you know, science kind of steps in a little bit with this, is muscles get stronger in pretty specific ways. And what I mean by that is the positioning of the body, the muscle, and then the way tension is applied, your body will adapt quite specifically to how you train that muscle. So here's a good example. There's a picture of Larry Scott. That's pretty impressive for back then, right?
He's the first Mr. Olympia?
First Mr. Olympia.
Damn, he looks really good.
Yeah, scroll down a little bit, Doug.
I didn't realize he looked...
Look at his arm. Look how nice... Look how impressive his arm was.
Damn, what year? What year
19,
is this?
Can you see what the first Mr. Olympia is in? 1960-something, maybe 65 or something like that.
Is he natural?
No, that back then, they I think it was 1965, they... he talked about taking one Dianabol pill a day, but back then D-ball was only 5 or 10 milligrams. So he took really low doses compared to the guys today. The doses really started getting ramped up. 1966.
He's impressive looking.
Pretty impressive, right? But so here's a good example, right? So let's say I'm doing a concentration curl for my bicep. So for those of you listening who don't know what a concentration curl is, there's two versions of it. One is where I'm sitting on a bench, my arm is up against my thigh, and I'm doing a curl. That's the one you'll see on TV when kids are working out in their bedrooms.
Arnold made that famous. Yeah.
Or the one that Arnold did in Pumping Iron.
Hanging over, right?
Yeah, where you're hanging over, your elbow's pointing down, and then you're doing a curl. When you do a concentration curl, the heaviest part of the concentration curl is when your arm is almost fully closed or contracted because you're fighting gravity directly, you know, because of the elbow positioning. So that means the greatest tension is at the fullest contraction of the bicep, okay? Now, if I do an exercise like a preacher curl, that's where my arm is over the bench at a different angle, the heaviest part of the curl is where my arm is more fully extended, okay? Mm. Now, this is where the myths came from of working the different biceps because people would say, oh, it's harder at the bottom than it is at the top or whatever. You're not, it doesn't, not working that way, but the muscle does get stronger based on the way you're applying that tension. So if I only ever did concentration curls, my strength curve would match more of the concentration curl. If I did only preacher curls, my strength curve would only match the preacher curl. Now, this is important to know, right? Because if I can get my, let's say my max curl is you know, 50 pounds.
Well, this is where exercise selection becomes important.
Very important.
Right.
This is why bodybuilders, they understood this by changing angles, right?
And I think the takeaway, because we're not saying that, you know, that doesn't mean that doing all these different variations isn't important, right? Or it's, what ends up happening and what I see here that's really common is someone will do, you know, three different bicep exercises in a routine, but the variation is more similar than they think it is,
yeah,
because of the position of the elbow.
So it's like standing barbell curl, standing you know, dumbbell curl,
easy curl, then all in the same position,
same tension, kind of curve, same position, exactly.
And so I think that's the real takeaway is understanding that if we're going to vary it to vary from the elbow, and that's kind of how I've always taught clients was, you know, if you're going to do a, you know, arm day and you're doing biceps, you know, try to incorporate at least, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 exercises where your elbow's either positioned right by your side, your elbow's out in front of you, or even elevated above where you're doing a curl down to your head to kind of target.
The three main elbow positions, and we're not even getting into hand positions, we'll get into that in a second, but the three main elbow positions that I've always taught to clients were elbows behind the body.
A drag curl?
Yeah, like a drag curl or a incline curl.
Right.
That one's pretty gnarly, by the way. The stretch on that is burns like crazy. Then your traditional barbell curl where the arms are at your sides. And then a concentration curl or a preacher curl where the arms are in front of you. But then even then, you also want to look at positions of tension. Again, preacher curl and a concentration curl, the elbow's in front of my body both times. But they feel very different because the concentration curl is heaviest at the contraction, whereas a preacher curl is heaviest more towards the extension. So that's something else you want to consider when you're doing the exercise. And this is you want to know this because you can't always just get stronger, okay? At some point, you know, you're going to start reaching a particular limit. Let's say I've been working out for 20 years, right? So, and let's say my curl is, you know, my max curl with good form is, let's say it's 130 pounds or whatever with a barbell. And it's going to be hard to get that to go up. But what I may do is I may be able to identify positions of that tension where I can improve that. So maybe I'm strong 135-pound barbell curl, but maybe I never do a concentration curl or I never do a drag curl and I'm weak there. So now I can focus on building strength in that particular part of tension. And what'll happen is you'll see your body respond. And then now let's talk about hand positioning, because that's the biceps are interesting because they flex the elbow, they curl the arm, but they also rotate the hand.
Right.
So if you're listening right now, you can actually test this out on yourself. You could kind of flex your arm and then just turn your hand to where it's facing you and then turn it to where it's facing away from
you.
You
see the bicep move.
You see it dance a little bit. I watched a movie when I was a kid. You know, when I first learned about that, there was this movie. I don't remember what it was. And this guy had a tattoo of like a naked lady on his bicep. And I don't remember what movie it was. And he told the kid, he's like, you want to see her move? You want to see her dance? And he did that with his hand. I was like, oh shit, you could do that? You can make your arm move like that? So the different positioning of your hand is important too. So, you know, if you're curling with your palms facing up, that's one position. Palms facing each other is another one. And then the most neglected is the palms facing down.
Like nobody does Zottman curl or the reverse curls.
Nobody does that. Now, on the other end of the spectrum or the other side of the arm is the tricep, which triceps, a lot of people don't know this because they don't get the glory like the bicep does. but the tricep makes up more of the arm size than the bicep does. It's a bigger,
right?
When you see an arm flex, you can see
three heads.
Yeah, and it's got three, right? Tricep. Now, tricep, the hand positioning doesn't do anything. That doesn't change anything.
So I think that right there, you got to stop there because this is such an important, because another common mistake that I would see all the time is that, you know, I'd see the kid. And when I point these things out too, this is not me like shaming anybody, because I fucking for sure did this too. You know, like I would go straight to the cables because it just felt good to warm up or start my first exercise. And I'd start with like the triangle, you know, and then I would do a reverse grip, and then I would do like a rope.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, oh, arms are done. Triceps are fucking pumped. You know, yeah. I'm good. But all those movements are pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah,
the same
nothing.
Stimulus, really, for my tricep.
Yeah. Actually, a reverse palms up grip press down is stupid because it's such a weak position for your hands. You can't even press good weight. But it doesn't affect the triceps at all. What affects the tricep is, again, elbow position and tension, just like with the bicep. So elbow up above your head or in front of you or down at your sides. That's kind of what you should focus on. And then the, you know, positions of tension. This is why sometimes people switch. They'll do an exercise. I remember this too when I was a kid. I was probably 18 or 19. I primarily almost always only did free weight exercise. No, maybe younger, 16. Only did free weight exercises. And then I, you know, and this is a mistake I make. I've made probably four or five times through my working out career, is I'll switch to something that works.
Yeah, and then you get stuck on it for a while.
Stuck on it. So I remember I switched to a cable curl. So I went from barbell curl to cable curl. I saw my arms respond. I'm like, oh, it's cable curls. That's everything. And so I just stuck to that. No, the reason why the cable curl worked was the tension was different because cable is consistent all the way at the bottom, all the way up, versus a barbell where the weight is, you know, depending on my elbow position and gravity, it's going to be a little lighter, a little heavier.
Now, what are your thoughts, too, on the... Because here's another mistake that I remember making a lot. Again, I talked about going straight into, like, you know, cable pushdowns or this easy cable curls to, like, start my bicep exercise off. And, you know, are there certain lifts that you like to always start with when you're doing your bicep or your tricep versus other exercises?
You know, I'm always partial to free weights because... Now, there's the whole, like, free weights build more muscle than... the machines debate, and you know, I'll debate that, and I think I can win that debate, but that's still a debate. Like, you know, Ben Pakulski, me and him have gotten into discussions over this.
Right, he makes a very compelling argument to cables.
And he's a very...
Hard to argue with a 300-pound man, too.
It's true. He's a very intelligent guy. He makes good points. But I'll still debate it. I still believe free weights will build more muscle. But here's the reason, real reason why, or the main reason why I like free weights. They don't... With machines, you have to adjust your body to the machine. But with free weights, the free weights model after you. I can have somebody who's 5 foot do an exercise with a free weight, and I can have a 6 foot guy do the same thing with free weights. Nothing has to change. With the machines are not designed for the variety of individual body shapes and movements. They have to design them for... What was the height? I think it was
like 5'8 or 5'10. Like if average 5'10 male is what all the machines and stuff are all based off of.
I remember learning that. Yeah. And so that's one of the big reasons. So when you get in a machine to do a curl, for example, or a tricep exercise, the axis of rotation, you want it to match your elbow, and your shoulder position needs to be good. And so it gets kind of weird if you don't if your body isn't...
Well, especially if you're 6'3". So
do you feel that?
Oh yeah, no, like machine curls are so awkward for me.
Because you're just too long, too long.
Yeah, I have to like scoot my butt back and lay my arm, and then even when I get to fully control, like I have really long arms too.
Yeah.
You know, even more so for a 6'3" guy, and from my elbow to my wrist, they're not normally meant for that. They're normally meant to be like four.
You just place the bar like on
yeah,
your,
I
on
like,
the lower
I,
part
I
of your
let
palm.
It, I actually let it rest in my palm. I don't even fully grip it like you would want to, you know?
Yeah. So, free weights free weights probably going to be your best option for arms. And a lot of people avoid the good old fashioned arm exercises, your supinating curls and your overhead dumbbell tricep extensions and your skull crushers and then your dips and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which brings me to another point. Especially, this is especially now if you're advanced, this may not apply if you've been working out a long time and really have developed your body well. But especially if you're a beginner or intermediate, you'll build, and I'll make this argument all day long. You want to build big biceps, you'll build bigger biceps getting stronger at barbell rows and pull ups than you will at doing curls.
Hmm.
This is those compound movements that, you know, maybe they're for back. Or, you know, the compound movements that are maybe for chest, those accessory muscles, those your biceps and triceps, they're involved pretty heavily.
Well, and I think the I think we should explain why that is, because a lot of people don't understand that. Because, you know, you talk one day, we'll talk about the importance of full range of motion and how important that is. And then, okay, well, when you do a bent over barbell row or you do a pull up, although a pull up is pretty close to a full range of motion bicep curl. But they're not quite as full range as like a concentration curl would be. Why is that? Well, why is it is, well, when I do a pull up, I'm pulling 220 pounds. Mm-hmm. You know, how often do I grab 220 pounds and curl it? Like, I don't. So the stimulation that you're getting from these big compound lifts, your biceps are having to help pull and assist a potentially 200 pound, you know, because when I row, I can row 200 something pounds too, where I can't curl, I can't bicep curl that. So, you know, your bicep is now having to adapt and get used to moving that much weight. And we know that moving that kind of weight, it's going to stimulate that growth. Like you said, I think for beginners, this is tantamount. I mean, if you're early on in your training, I think it's so important that you understand this. Now,
because what do guys do, especially when they're beginners? I want to build my arms, so I'm going to go do a bunch of isolation exercises. Right.
This was the mistake I made. I was doing all these curls. I mean, I wasn't doing lots of pull-ups. I wasn't doing bent-over rows. I was doing bicep curls, you know, and machine curls and tricep pushdowns and all the different Nautilus machines that were in there and, you know, getting these great hypertrophy pumps in my arms, but they're good strength movements. You know, along those lines, I wanted to ask you, because we're probably unique each and – but I bet we can give some really cool exercises for people. Do you remember, like, you know, specific movements for your buys or your tries that, like, you really kind of neglected and then you incorporated and it was like, poof, you noticed a big difference?
Yeah. So for triceps, I remember distinctively doing, because when I first started working out, I didn't do close grip bench presses that much. I did, I did overhead tricep extension and skull crushers. I did regular bench press. I did that, of course, a lot, like most guys. But I didn't do a lot of close grip bench press. I remember I read an article with, I forgot who it was, the late Mike Matarazzo, I think it was. He was a bodybuilder from the 90s who had these insanely massive arms. And he was also Italian, so I kind of identified with the guy. And he did an article and he talked about close grip bench presses and how when he was younger, that's how he got his triceps so big. And this guy's triceps were one of his hallmark body parts. So I started doing them. I started doing close grip bench presses and I got really strong at them. And my arms, my triceps exploded, especially the outer head, the part that shows up, you know, when you flex your tricep, that one that's on the outside of your arm. And I remember I went up, I first started doing close grip bench press, and because it was a new movement, this is what I love about new movements, you get that central nervous system adaptation because you have to kind of learn how to do it. So my strength went up really quick, and I went from, I think I gained like 20 or 30 pounds on the bar in a very short period of time, and my arms grew like a quarter inch in a very, very short period of time, which is a lot. That's a lot to add, and I know because I used to measure my arms every day.
I thought you were going to pick weighted dips because I know that's a hallmark move for you too.
Oh, I like now
because incline. I like for some reason the incline for me, and I think it's just the angle.
You feel it more.
Yeah, I mean an incline close grip barbell press blew my triceps up, and I actually didn't find that till about, I want to say, 5 years ago.
Where'd you see it?
I don't even remember if it was an article that I read or what it was that I came across, and I never really like applied it in my routine. And I'll tell you part of that reason why, a reason I didn't was, and I, you know what it was before I did that, and you know, this is jumping around because now I'm talking about chest, you know, incline press for my chest was one of the most game changers for me. Like most young boys that try to do an incline press, everyone flat benches, right? You get in, you flat bench, and you try and get better at benching. And then you go to incline and your strength is like 50%. Mm-hmm. And it's depressing. So like every other teenage boy, you neglect it even more because you suck at it. So you stay away from it. And 1 year, and this was about, this was like 6-7 years ago, I went on this mission that, and it was bad. Like I had a huge discrepancy. I could bench 315, but I could barely 185 incline. Mm-hmm. I set a goal for myself to catch my incline press up to my flat bench. And it took me about a year and a half, 2 years to get it caught up, and a huge improvement on my chest. And so once I was able to move good weight on the incline, that's when I moved to like variations of that. And you know, I decided to start doing this close grip incline press. And just the way that the incline press retracts my shoulders really well and kind of sits me in that position when I'm in that on the incline, it was a really comfortable position for me. And I could really concentrate on keeping my elbows tucked in tight. And I just felt it right away. The very first time, just the eccentric motion, so the decelerating of the weight down, I could really feel my triceps working and then to come out of it. And I could move good weight. And so, you know, when I compare it to skull crushers and, you know, dumbbell exercises and everything else I was doing, when you think about it, like, I mean, I wasn't moving more than maybe 30, 40 pound dumbbells or 60, 80 pounds on a machine or whatever. And here with this incline barbell press, I could move 185 to 225 pounds. Mm-hmm. And man, my triceps just fucking blew up. Mm-hmm. And I felt I had a similar reaction to dips because, again, being a young teenage boy, I remember the very first time my buddy made me, I was like 17, 18 years old, and he tells me to hop up to do a body weight dip, and I couldn't even do a single body weight dip. I couldn't dip my own body weight one time, and I barely weighed anything back then. And, of course, what do? Because of that, I neglected it.
Doing that again.
Right, right. You don't do it. No one wants to be a guy in there shaking like a leaf trying to do one single dip. Yeah, yeah. And so, like a dumbass, you know, I avoided it for many years. And then when I revisited doing dips and getting strong at that and got to a point where I could body weight dip myself 20, 30 times, no problem, then I could actually start to add weight to that. So those two movements for triceps were, and now... they are staples. I mean, I will not enter a tricep workout with not incorporating one of those two movements because it was such a game changer.
Yeah,
for me,
for biceps, believe it or not, this wasn't even that long ago. I had gotten really good at barbell rowing and deadlifting, and this was back when I would just feed myself and let my body weight climb really high. So I got really strong, but I was heavy. I was like 220. And I would do barbell rows with decent form with 300 and something pounds, right? And I'd do them really heavy and whatever. And I was deadlifting, so I'd deadlift all this weight and I'd pull over, you know, in the mid fives. And I never really did pull-ups as part of my workouts. I just didn't do it. And I remember I went to the gym and I was working out. And this is at the time I owned my wellness studio. So this has to have been at least 8 or 9, maybe 10 years ago. I would drive over to Gold's and work out, and there was this girl there that, you know, she was always there at the same time, and she was really into working out, and she would train with her boyfriend, and we'd say hi to each other, whatever. And she goes, and she's like, hey, are you ever going to compete or whatever? And I think she was just, you know, just trying to be nice. I'm like, no, I just like to work out. She says, well, if you ever do, I have some advice for you. So I'm like, okay, one of those criticism.
Yeah.
She goes, you know, you have a very muscular back, but you need more lats. Nobody's ever told me I need more lats before. My back was always really strong, so I never even considered that I needed to develop it more. So she said that to me, and it kind of fucked with me a little bit. And so I this whole mission, I'm going to train my lats more. Now, when you do a row, you hit your lats, but really you get a lot more of that mid-back kind of stuff, especially the way I row. But pull-ups and pull-downs and that kind of stuff, that's a direct lat exercise. So I said, okay, I'm going to get really strong at doing pull-ups. And so I wasn't good at them at all. It was hard for me to do like 10 bodyweight pull-ups. But I got to the point where I got really strong, and then I could strap weight around my waist to the point where I was doing pull-ups. I would do 3 reps with like over 100 pounds strapped around my waist. And the side effect of that, my lats definitely grew. The side effect, my arms grew. My biceps grew. Mm. And I remember, you know, I'm doing these heavy pull-ups and getting stronger, and I would do it with like either a neutral grip or with a supinated grip. And I hadn't measured my arms in a while, but, you know, I felt like I wanted to measure them. And I measured them. I'm like, wait a minute, is this right? And I did it again. I'm like, my arms got bigger. And I was trying to piece it together. I'm like, holy shit, it's got to be the chin-ups. Because I know when I do that really hard, I do feel my back working. But, of course, you feel your biceps working as well. So it's those compound kind of movements. And it's funny because when we talk about triceps, if I'm talking to somebody who's in the space of muscle building, or we're talking to a bodybuilder or whatever, and I say to them, dips and close grip bench presses are great for triceps, they're going to probably agree with me. But if I say that there's a good compound exercise for biceps, nobody wants to agree with me. It's the same fucking thing.
Right.
You do supinated grip pull-ups.
Right.
It's like doing dips.
Right.
Because remember, dips, parallel bar dips, they work your triceps, but they also work your chest and your shoulders quite a bit. Supinated grip pull-ups, they work your back, yes, but they also work the biceps quite hard. And especially if you're a beginner, you are going to progress not just your whole body more, obviously, because you're doing compound movements, but you're going to progress in your arms more by doing those. Now, the isolation exercises, I'm not saying that you should neglect those. Those are also extremely important, especially as you become more advanced, because it becomes more important as you get advanced to add more volume. Now, you can start throwing in all kinds of different isolation exercises.
Right.
And here's the other thing about arms. And, you know, I know all muscles respond the same, and, you know, you don't need to work one muscle differently than the other, because I hate it when people say things like calves need high reps and this body part needs low reps or whatever. That's not true. The muscles are all kind of the same. The big difference really is in how it impacts your how much rest you need from it, like how much it impacts your whole body. If I work out my legs real hard, it fucking zaps me. If I just work my arms, I'm not that tired.
Right.
This means you can do a lot of frequency with your arms. Like, you could work out your arms a lot.
Right.
So you could do it where maybe you train your whole body, you know, 3 days a week, which is usually what I recommend people, anywhere between 2 to 4 days a week for the whole body. But let's say you really want to make a special focus on your arms. As long as you adjust the intensity, fucking go hit your arms 5 days a week. Watch right. what happens.
Yeah.
Added frequency makes a huge difference.
It's one of those, it is one of those muscles that you can get away with doing that, because it doesn't tax the CNS, I think, as much. You know, I had a game changer thing that happened by accident for us. And this is, you know, personal, just because I probably never really did this. It was, you know, we used to have, this my buddy and I, we used to work out when we were kids, and we had the same kind of arm routine and, you know, the pyramid sets, and we did all whatever we were reading, you know what I'm saying? Like this, and it was like the same.
I laugh because I did the same.
Right. It's whatever was in Muscle and Fitness that week, right? So fucking that's how we train all the time. And I remember, and preacher curls were very common. We did, and preacher curls were for sure one of the first things that I saw, like, growth and change in my biceps. But we couldn't get an easy curl bar because the gym was so busy. And so we modified, and we did the preacher curls with independent dumbbells. And I remember when I first did it, I was really weak. I couldn't do very much weight. But man, I and back then, right, we attributed soreness to the effectiveness of a workout always. So it got me really fucking sore. And so we started going back to that, and I started training with preacher curls. And I don't see many people do this, so I think it's maybe a tip. Hopefully somebody that's been training for a long time can incorporate that, and you can get back to me on how well this works for you. But, you know, I did these preacher curls, and we did them with independent dumbbells, and it just exploded my arms. Mm. But I had the same experience too, like you did with pull-ups. And what I noticed with the pull-ups was I always did overhand pull-ups forever, because I was always doing pull-ups for my back. It was always about back. And of course you get a little bit more lats involved when you have the overhand grip versus like a supinated grip. And I don't know what it was that made me decide to do it. I think I was working out with some bodybuilder guys. Like, oh, do you ever do supinated? You should do supinated sometimes. And gets me to do it supinated, and, you know, so your palms are facing you, right? That's what that means when I'm doing a pull-up. And, you know, I start doing that, and, yeah, you know, I felt it in my back. That was all great, but that I actually noticed my forearms and my biceps blew up from that. So those were two big moves that, again, I neglected for many years. I didn't think to do.
Dude, for people who debate me, because I've done a couple posts on that where I'll have, and I know it's controversial, that's why I do it, and I'll put up a picture. I've done this on my Insta story, and I actually did it on my actual Instagram page too, where I'll have a picture of a barbell curl and then a picture of a pull-up. And I'll say, which one builds bigger biceps? And then in the caption, I'll write, the pull-up does. And people will debate me. No, it's the curl. How can you say that, this and that? And I'm like, well, if you have to compare them, first of all, I think you should do both. So that's not really the argument. But if you have to compare them, the pull-up will actually build more bicep. And then the example I always give them is I say, I'll tell you what, some of the most muscular arms, biceps especially, you'll ever see on any athlete is a gymnast.
Yeah.
Look at male gymnasts. They don't do fucking curls at all. They just pull themselves up all day long on the rings and shit. And they have arms. I've seen gymnasts who have arms like fucking amateur, amazing bodybuilders. Yeah. You know, and it's all they're doing is pulling their body up on the rings all the time. I'm pretty sure they never do a single curl.
No, it's so true.
To develop their arms. It's pretty crazy, you know, when you go to think about it, that the compound movements.
Now, what is your thoughts on, because you see, I think, with arm training, you do see a lot of drop sets and pyramid sets, and you see a lot of things like that. A lot of supersets get involved with that. Yeah. How do you use that when we teach programming and stuff like that? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Is there too much of that? How often do you implement that?
Yeah, it's very individual, right? Like, you can overdo it really quick. I used to do that all the time as a kid. I would take every high intensity technique and I'd throw them all at my body. So it's like, okay, today I'm going to do forced reps and three partial reps, and I'm going to do a drop set, and I just throw everything at, you know, but the kitchen sink at myself, and I wouldn't respond. And of course, when you train clients, if you've ever tried that once, you know that that's a terrible idea. So they do work when you use them judiciously, like every once in a while. But I think what's more important than that is learning how to train in different rep ranges. And this is important for arms, just like it is for the rest of the body. You know, I used to get stuck in the low rep ranges because when I would read, you know, bodybuilding magazines when I was a kid, I must have seen this at least 10 different times. They would have the rep ranges, and this is how they would label them. It would be 6 to 8 mass building, and it'd be like 8 to 12 would be like sculpting. Yeah. And then it'd be 15 to 20 would be the pump or getting cut or something like that,
yeah.
Cutting.
Yeah.
And fuck that. I don't want to cut.
Yeah. I was already skinny.
Yeah. I'm not trying to shape.
That's exactly why I used to lift 6. Bro, I never saw over 6 reps for like the first like 3 years of lifting weights for that exact reason, because every magazine. Because
that's the mass building.
Yeah, exactly. I'm already skinny as fuck. I don't need any more cuts, dude. I need mass. I want mass.
Exactly.
So I did 6 reps of everything for a long time. And you know what? And this is just a testament to, like you said, that it's not about what rep range is better. What rep range is better is probably the one that you do the least, right?
That's
what's better, and that's going to be different for every person. So if you're, you know, if you're one of my female clients, very common, because they were marketed to this way, that, you know, if you want tone arms and lean arms, you do 15 to 20
yeah,
reps.
Yeah.
So they're used to all these high intensity, low weight, lots of repetitions, low rest periods. And that doesn't mean it's bad or it's wrong. Mm-hmm. It just means they've probably been doing that a lot more than they were probably ever grabbing, you know, a heavy ass weight and doing it for 3 to 6 reps, which if you want lean and tone arms, and you've been doing 15 to 20 reps for months.
Go do some low rep shit. Watch.
Go do some low reps, and you're going to have incredible arms.
By the way, tone does, you know, we've said this before, but just in case we have new listeners, tone is not real. Muscles build or they shrink. So if they build a little bit, they just feel harder. And so they, you know, the fitness industry created that term to attract women to gyms. But really, if you're trying to tone your arms or just trying to sculpt your arms, if you're a lady and you're listening right now, what you're really trying to do is build your arms. And so the fastest way to get your arms to look the way you want is the same thing that's the fastest way to get your arms to build. So your goal when you walk into the gym, unless you're at the point where you look in the mirror and go, I don't want any more progress. I don't want my muscles to develop anymore. I don't want any more sculpt. I don't want any more tone. I don't want any more whatever. That's different. But if you're like, oh, I want to really work on my body and I want to change my arms, your goal should be to build muscle and do what builds muscle the most effective way. And when it comes to rep ranges work excellent when they're new.
Right.
They stop working after about 3 to 6 weeks is when shit starts to plateau. Just change it. You know, it's funny. Just doing that, even if you do the same routine all the time, although it's a good idea to change that too. But if you just, for 3 weeks you worked in the low rep range, and then for 3 more weeks you did higher reps, and for 3 more weeks you did, you know, moderate reps, watch what happens. Your body doesn't plateau nearly as much, and you just continue to progress. It's pretty awesome.
Now, I was actually just talking to somebody the other day that we had this exact discussion, and it was a guy, and he was talking about how he trains, you know, all of his muscles, and I was telling him the importance of kind of phasing his routines, right? And, you know, he's like, well, no, I work all rep ranges. I was like, oh, okay, well, so what are you currently working on right now? Are you in, you know, low rep range? And he's like, well, every workout, I incorporate all of them. Yeah. And that's not wrong, right? And they've done studies to show that somebody who's changing all the rep ranges every single workout versus somebody who phases it, like Sal's saying, for 3 to 4 weeks, pretty similar as far as their results. The problem with it, though, is it's hard to measure that way. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see that, you know, what is my body adapting to the most right now? Because if you're throwing a high rep range superset in a training session, plus you're doing a strength heavy 4 to 6 reps, and you're doing that every single workout, you're manipulating all these rep ranges, well, then it's really hard to tell, because there is always going to be an individual variance, mm-hmm. and everybody's bodies will adapt different. And, you know, Sal and I may be following the same exact program. We'll use MAPS, you know, anabolic, for example, and his body just responds incredible for phase 1 always. And mine just might always do great in phase 3. And so understanding, like,
you know, which one to stretch out, which one to
exactly
do shorter.
That, and that's how we even I even modify our own programs, is I know what stimulus my body just loves and it loves to respond to, and I get no adverse effects from it. And so I might stretch that phase for an extra week or two longer.
You know, the other thing too, and you'll understand this as a trainer, and studies fail to see this all the time, is that there's a mental component as well when it comes to training. And there's a different mentality that goes into training in the low rep range than goes into the higher rep superset, you know, type rep range. It's a very different mentality.
You're chasing different adaptations.
Different. So when I go to the gym and I train in the low rep ranges, heavy low rep ranges, it's a different mentality. It's a different rest period. It's a different feeling. I'm probably not going to get that much of a pump, but I'm going to feel very solid and strong. I'm prepared differently. I'm set up different. It's totally different. When I go in for a superset with shorter reps and I'm doing higher, you know, shorter rest periods and higher reps, I'm going, it's totally different. I know it's a different feel in the body. I'm going to get more of a pump, less of that solid feeling. So, and that's important. You know, people always forget to account for that. That mental space you need. Like if I'm training a client and I'm telling, let's say Doug's coming in to work out and I'm going to train him, I got to tell him, hey, we're going to be doing low reps and heavy weight today. Or, hey, we're doing supersets tomorrow. It makes a fucking difference. And I know this as a trainer when I would train clients versus, hey, today we're doing everything.
This is extremely important. I don't know how many times that I would take somebody and I would move them into a new phase, i.e. example here would be, okay, we just got done doing, like I just taught them, you know, kind of hypertrophy training. So we're training in this high rep range. We're getting 12 to 15 reps, maybe even throwing supersets in there, and they're feeling this pump. And it's the first time that they've trained like this. And so my client's loving it. They're telling me like, oh my God, my arms, and they're looking themselves in the mirror and they love the feel of it. And we're training that way for 3 or 4 weeks. And then now I move them into like a strength phase. And now I'm training them in the 3 to 5 rep range. And they're like, they don't feel the same. Therefore, because they don't feel that pump, or then they go, oh, well, I liked the other way of training, or I felt like that was working better, because they attribute the pumping sensation to what's working better. Just the same with the same mistake that people make with the soreness, like, oh, it gets me really sore. So they're different adaptations, and both of them contribute to your overall, you know, gains in your arms or your overall success in training. So it is important to get people in that space. And I would have to always remind my client that, like, listen, it's a different adaptation, even though it's the same exercise. It could be a barbell curl, right? We're doing a barbell curl both times, but now we're going after strength. So we're doing this for 5 or 6 reps, where I just got done teaching you this 15, 20 reps, and it's going to feel different.
That's right. And there's also the specificity, in the sense that, you know, if you want to get better at general, you know, if I go and I just focus on sprinting, I can really see my sprint increase dramatically. If I sprint and long distance run and jog and do these, I'll improve still, but I'm going to get less improvements in each one of those, which makes a big difference to the psyche of an individual who's training. I love when I'm in the low rep range and only low rep range, I love seeing the weight go up on the bar. I love when I'm in the higher rep range or the superset rep, you know, type phases, I love watching the pump improve and watching my endurance improve and how I can rest shorter in between sets. I love that. And that is a, you know, trying to cut the psyche of the client out, or trying to cut that mental part of working out, good luck. You can't. It makes a huge difference. So phasing your workouts is an extremely important component of training, all training, not just the arm training. And the best way that I recommend most people do it is stay with one for a certain period of time, get good at it, and then move to another one. Stay with that for a little while, get good at it, and then move to another one, versus all of it, all the time, all at the same time.
I also think that when you do that, it's easier to use these other tools and strategies. For example, like we talked about with the pyramid setting or the drop sets, or because those are, they work well in a more hypertrophy-based training cycle. If you are chasing more of the pump and we're working in the higher rep range, it makes more sense to superset or drop set, because you're chasing more of that adaptation, versus doing that in a strength type of a cycle, where right now I'm more focused on building strength. It's not going to be as advantageous if I'm in a strength cycle to be doing a short rest period or a drop set where I do a bunch of reps,
right.
Because that's going to fatigue me and it's going to hinder my strength in the next set or the next exercise that I'm doing. So that's another reason why I really like to, you know, try and teach people to separate their phases or whatever their adaptations are focused on. So if we're going to be doing low rep range, instead of sporadically just throwing it all into every single workout, and sometimes you drop set, sometimes you superset, sometimes you pyramid set, sometimes it's high reps, sometimes it's low reps, sometimes it's heavy, sometimes it's light. It's like, instead of just being, you know, chaotic about all of it and really understanding how your body's responding, you know, focus on, you know, a rep range. Understand that if we are in strength, that it's, you know, good long rest periods. We're lifting heavy. The goal is to lift more weight and to progress week over week, lifting more weight and increasing your strength. And then when you're doing things like chasing the pump and you're not so worried about how heavy of a weight.
The weight doesn't matter.
Weight doesn't matter. Then it doesn't matter if you're going lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter.
As long as you get more of a feel and more of a pump.
Exactly.
That's all that's important. Speaking of supersets, here's a superset that I loved doing back in the day that I don't know very many other people that will do. Now, with supersets, there's a lot of different ways you can combine exercise. And a superset represents two exercises done back-to-back without any rest. And now you can generally do this with any two exercises for a body part. That's they're all technically called supersets. So two bicep exercises put together, that's a superset. But one of the best ways I love to apply supersets was to do a heavier compound movement. And I don't mean heavier in the sense that the rep ranges are lower. I just mean that compound movements tend to be heavier. So like, I'm going to be able to do, you know, I do a chin-up with more weight than I will with a curl, like we were saying earlier. So I like to do a compound movement first, which means two joints are being moved, and then I like to superset that with an isolation movement. And this is for the whole body. I'll do this with my quads. I'll do this with my chest. I'll do this with my back. But you can even do this with your arms. So here's two supersets that are amazing. So for triceps, start out with dips or close grip bench press. There's your compound movement. And then right after that, move right to an isolation movement like rope press downs or skull crushers or something like that. Crazy, crazy pump.
Oh, yeah.
Now the bicep one, here's one that nobody ever does. Do heavy supinated grip pull-ups. And when you do them for your biceps, when you pull yourself up, really focus on squeezing your biceps at the top rather than squeezing your back. Do that first and then go immediately to an isolation exercise like cable curls, machine curls, or barbell curls. Your arms will explode. The pump is absolutely insane with something like that. And I learned that from an old bodybuilding magazine, and Mike Mentzer actually wrote the article and talked about how chin-ups were one of the greatest bicep exercises. Did that, and boy, let me tell you, I love that one.
Well, I mean, this is something that, and I hope that we're giving people what they want right now and by doing some of these episodes, because we did a lot of this when we first started, and we got away from it for a while, and it's just tough when we have three quads a week, plus we have interviews always lined up, but we've been getting such a great response from this and then the guides. And you guys, there's the guide goes right along with some of the things we're talking about. So some of the people that may want that, they'll in the show notes, there'll be a direct link to that. It's totally free.
It's at mindpumpfree.com, and it's, I think it's called the Big Arms, How to Get Big Arms, but really it applies to anybody who just wants to, you know, build, sculpt, tone, whatever the word you want to use, work their arms. And it just talks about some of the stuff that we talked about in a little bit greater detail. It's totally free. And on that site, we have other guides about, you know, other types of, you know, other body parts and other aspects of training that you can get. Again, they're all totally, totally free. Go check them out. And I miss Justin. We'll get him back soon. Next episode.
Right on.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.